The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, Pete Sweeney, joined once again by my esteemed deputy editor, John Dixon. John, if I would have told you a month ago that after 3 weeks the Chiefs would be under 500, what would you have said?
I would have said, well, I guess it's possible, but I don't think so.
Improbable, you know, probably is the right word.
Yeah, but you know, it's not like we didn't identify these opening five games of the season as a tough road. We did. We knew these were going to be tough games coming in. And I think that I said once or twice that if we got through these first five games at, 4-1 or 3-2, we'd be in good shape. And we could still do that. But I didn't really expect this.
No, I didn't either, but it is what it is, as Eric Bieniemy alluded to, and we'll get into that. But first, I got to tell you, if you like the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, please go to Apple iTunes, leave us preferably a 5-star rating, and share us your thoughts on what you think of the podcast network. We appreciate it. If you haven't heard it yet, go back. We have an emergency podcast on Josh Gordon coming to Kansas City. We'll talk about that on this episode. We'll go through our world famous marinated takeaways, the best Chiefs thing we heard all week. But I think it's important that we start here, John, with the news today of Andy Reid. We all know what has happened on Sunday after the game. Andy Reid was feeling a little bit ill, left the stadium in an ambulance, checked into the hospital. Dave Tobe did the press conference, which was a little bit weird coming out of the loss. We found out that night that Andy Reid was in stable condition and resting. And then on Monday, the Chiefs Communications Vice President Ted Cruz joined the Zoom conference call, and he said that Andy Reid had been released from the hospital. He is in great spirits and would be champing at the bit to get back to work either on Monday or on Tuesday. When Wednesday hits, coming up now, it should be business as usual, we think. I think it'll be important to see Andy Reid when we do the media and the practice availability and whatnot on Wednesday, and maybe a little bit more clarity on what exactly happened on Sunday. But all in all, right, John, good to see and hear that the head coach is in good spirits doing well.
Yeah, I mean, we have to assume that this ended up being a minor problem. If it had been particularly serious, I would have thought they'd kept him in the hospital for a couple of days. So I think it's reasonable to think that this was just, you know, some kind of weird thing that happened. Didn't agree with him or dehydration. Or something. Yeah,
we don't really know. We're completely speculating here. So I want to note that before I'm about to say what I'm about to say. But it was 90 degrees on Sunday. Yeah. At Arrowhead. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of you guys that are listening to this podcast were out there, and so it was hot, and Andy Reid is 63. When you're in your 60s, John, as you would know, you got to sometimes check things out just in case, right? And so maybe
this was a grand precaution
of Andy Reid just making sure that all is good. It seems like, from what we know, all is good, and I think it's a big sigh of relief, and I thought it was telling that they made a deal of this on Sunday Night Football on a really exciting game between the Green Bay Packers and San Francisco 49ers. You had Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth really breathing a sigh of relief when it came to even America and the NFL as a whole. Just another subtle reminder of how much Andy Reid means to this league. And it's not just a Chiefs thing. It is a general league love that's shared for the head coach.
Right. And I think that's something that we can easily forget as Chiefs fans is how much the Chiefs are viewed as one of the teams that's at the top of the league right now. And we're not used to that. You know, it's been a long period of time where we were anything but that. And it's kind of interesting that in a situation like this, we really get some perspective of how we are viewed by the rest of the league. If we don't get that message from other teams coming in and playing us as if it's their Super Bowl, as we've now seen for a couple of games this
year. Regardless of the head coach, if you win a title, that's going to be the case for the years after. And the Chiefs are certainly getting that right now, and we'll get into that game and what happened on Sunday and our marinated takeaways. So Andy Reid, as far as we know, doing well. We'll see what the update is on Wednesday when he is scheduled to join the media. Typically that'll happen at 11:45 a.m. Arrowhead time. So stay tuned to our Twitter, our website and whatnot. We'll have an update there. John, I'd mentioned the emergency podcast we did yesterday. You were unavailable at the time to join us. We got a few of our takes in. I shared a lot of my thoughts. If you're interested in that, we had four of us from Arrowhead Pride on there sharing our immediate thoughts after we found out the news here. Josh Gordon is coming to, let's be clear here, the practice squad of the Kansas City Chiefs. That was quickly a point that a lot of people wanted to note, that Gordon won't necessarily be playing against the Philadelphia Eagles. I guess that's possible, but it seems it is a little bit less plausible at this point, considering he needs to get in a little bit of shape. We're seeing that with Le'Veon Bell, for example, in Baltimore. You need to learn the Andy Reid offense, which has historically been a learning process. And so talking about maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks until we even see Gordon. But your immediate thoughts, your reaction to this news that Josh Gordon is coming to Kansas City.
Well, I think the practice squad thing is a big tell on this. If they thought that he could be an immediate contributor, they wouldn't be fooling around with that. They'd just be signing him to the active roster. And so clearly they don't think he's going to be an immediate contributor and that he's going to take a little time to get it together. And also, there's some risk in signing a player like this. He may not be everything you want him to be. You don't want to take up a roster spot while you're figuring that out. So this is exactly the right situation for the Chiefs, is to put him on the practice squad, see what they've got going on. They invest literally, well, it's not nothing, but nearly nothing. Those practice squad salaries do count against the salary cap, but they're like, you know, $12,000 a week or something. That's nothing in salary cap world. And I think in the end, what we're going to see is that this is a move for the for the postseason. You know, as you note, it's going to take a while for Gordon to be fully versed in what the Chiefs offense is all about. And at the end of the season, he might be a guy that could be a contributor that other teams don't have any tape on. Yeah. And the Chiefs would be able to use him in ways that other teams don't expect. So to me, this seems like a move with the postseason in mind.
Yeah, I guess I would disagree only slightly. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I think that initially the news that was coming out was that Gordon might be available to just jump on the field week four. I don't think you're going to see Gordon in Kansas City. And I think it's a little bit earlier than the postseason. I think it's more of a second half of the schedule thing. Sure. Here's how the schedule goes. It goes Philadelphia, Buffalo. You wish you could have a healthy Josh Gordon, but I think that's too soon. Washington, maybe, but I think the Tennessee Titans, October 24th, which is about a month from this recording, seems reasonable to maybe see Josh Gordon, so long as everything stays okay, meaning he is taking to the playbook, he's getting in the shape, he is staying out of trouble. This is a player for various reasons who has had 6 suspensions. We can't really ignore that. But the upside here, and I've said it in a couple places, if you haven't heard my commentary on this, I'll say it again. the upside here is through the roof. I know that a lot of teams that probably, especially in Cleveland and Seattle and New England, where Josh Gordon has been, probably look at this and say, yeah, okay, you know what? Good luck with that, right? But good luck with that, because if it doesn't work out in 2 or 3 weeks, the Chiefs waive him, release him, whatever it takes, and he's out of the mix. The upside here is Antonio Brown in Tampa Bay, because you had Buffalo that tried to trade for Antonio Brown. It sounded like he was traded for a night and then reneged the deal. And so he ended up back with the Steelers. He ends up with the Raiders. That was crazy. And then when he signs with the Buccaneers, you probably had Buffalo and Oakland saying, hey, good luck with that. And now Tom Brady has essentially turned Antonio Brown into a real viable receiver for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a part of that offense when he's not on the COVID-19 list. You connect him with one of these otherworldly quarterbacks. It suddenly gives you a lot of reason to want to stay out of trouble, to want to stay on the field, to revive your career. And not having played two games in 2013, now granted, we have to say that that is 8 years ago, 1,600 yards is a stupid number for missing two games of a season, John. So yeah,
it really is.
And we have seen where even receivers who have been around the age of 30 remain productive. I think about Adam Thielen in Minnesota, for example, and Antonio Brown I just talked about. And so you have this possibility of Josh Gordon coming in and finding a way to be productive. And if there's one small silver lining to all the trouble he's been in, he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on him that you would otherwise have in a full 7 or 8 year career. And so, you know, you talk about Brett Veach and his low risk, high reward. This is the definition of that, right?
Right.
You could like put this in an encyclopedia and say, yeah, there's a low risk, high reward move, and this would fall right into that category.
Picture of Josh Gordon right there. Yeah. Well, another thing too, the practice squad move gives them one other option. Even when they get to that game against Tennessee, if supposing that they think he might be ready that early, and he might be, they don't even have to put him on the roster. They could elevate him for a couple of games.
Right.
And, you know, it looks good right now. Let's see what he looks like. Elevate him for a game or two. And then if it doesn't pan out in a game situation, no problem. Still no risk. This is really a sharp move, I think, for the Chiefs, that they were able to get him that way.
It is worth watching whether the Chiefs end up protecting him if they need to keep him on the practice squad for a little bit. They haven't really been using the protections as much as other teams have been around the league.
That's right.
But there have reportedly been multiple teams that were interested in Gordon prior to signing in Kansas City. But I don't think this is a quick fix for a wide receiver two by committee that you're getting right now, which has not really worked. I know McCall Hardman has flashed a few plays, but it doesn't seem like he's necessarily grabbing that role by the horns when it comes to a reliable player. For example, downfield, it's been more of the orchestrated plays for McCall Hardman. Marcus Robinson doesn't know where the end zone is. Byron Pringle has left some room to be desired. And so here we go. We'll see what Josh Gordon can do in a couple of weeks. Where is Defo, by the way? I know Show and BK Ryan. I haven't seen Defo either. all right, let's move on to the snap count lessons. John, you dove into these snap counts from the Chiefs and Chargers. We'll get into our takeaways in the next segment, our world famous marinated takeaways. But let's go over what you learned from the snaps.
Well, obviously the big thing, everybody was watching for what Juan Thornhill would do in this game. And he got more snaps, but he didn't get the kind of snaps you'd expect for somebody who was coming in to replace Daniel Sorensen, which seems to be the thing that people are focused on at this point, is that Thornhill should be out there in place of Sorensen. Sorensen didn't have quite as many snaps as you would normally see the starting safety get.
Yeah, I have a quick point on this, and we're going to go over a little bit of what Spagnuolo and Bieniemy said yesterday. You can get that on From the Podium on the Zoom conference calls. The full From the Podium has the full press conferences from Monday. But one thing that stuck out was Steve Spagnuolo emphasized that the Chiefs are really trying to get into their dime looks early. Mm-hmm. So he's not ready to make Juan Thornhill necessarily the Dan Sorensen starter role, but he's trying to force second and longs and third and longs. Mm-hmm. You get the dime look, and then suddenly you could have three safeties on the field. And so I just, that jumped out to me when he said that during his press conference. Again, go back to From the Podium. Continue, John.
Yeah, well, and my speculation, without, you know, looking at a detailed charting of the game, is that Thornhill was out there for those third safety looks and got a few snaps as in the two safety looks. I mean, that's how the percentages would add up in any logical way. And it was an increase of what we saw in week two. So that's a step forward in the eyes of many people who want to see Thornhill on the field all the time. So that's a good thing. I also thought the other big thing from the game was Ben Neiman's snap counts. And this is, again, a place where fans want to see another player on the field in his place. Of course, at this point, who would that be? You know, we haven't seen a lot of production out of Darius Harris or Dorian O'Daniel. So at this point, as long as Willie Gay is off the field, Ben Neiman's going to get some snaps. Now, having said that, he had fewer snaps than he has had for some time, and they were different. The character of the snaps was different. Normally, he's a guy who's typically on the field for more passing plays than rushing plays. But in Sunday's game, it was the opposite. He was emphasizing rushing plays over passing plays. And this is, you know, maybe that could have been something that just happened in this particular game because of a few snaps one way or the other. That's certainly possible. But last year, he had one game where he was used more against the rush than against the pass, and 11 games that were the opposite. So this looks like the beginning of a trend. Whether it turns out to be a trend, we'll just have to wait and see.
Right. I mean, at this stage, Dorian O'Daniel, and I'm not even killing him here because you can make a really nice career out of being a special teamer.
Sure.
The Chiefs do not use him as a linebacker. It's almost like he should lose the LB position and just be ST Dorian O'Daniel. So that's not an option. It's interesting because Willie Gay is eligible to come off the injured reserve. He has been dealing with the turf toe since the preseason game against the Minnesota Vikings. We'll see how he impacts. I think this conversation we have next week will be important when it comes to the linebacker position, because Gay, we'll see if he is finally back in the mix. He'll have a big impact on who plays and who doesn't. How does Nick Bolton get used? Maybe Neiman finally doesn't really play all that much. I think that's a certain possibility when Willie Gay finally gets back into the lineup. Anything else that we need to touch upon snap count wise before we move on, John?
No, really, those are the big things. There was a lot of stuff in the snap counts that just seemed to be, you know, more of the same.
Right.
You know, and those were the two biggest things that I noticed while going through the data this week. But you're right. I think if Gay is actually able to come back for the game against the Eagles, then we might have a lot to talk about there. Now, whether he will be back is unknown. I mean, we assume that this injury that he has is not particularly serious and that he'll be back after the minimum number of games have elapsed on injured reserve, but we don't really know that. So I think the over and under on the number of questions that Andy Reid will be asked about Willie Gay tomorrow could be pretty high.
If you're wondering, wide receiver-wise, past Tyreek Hill, D-Rob is still matching about Tyreek Hill at 54, Mecole Hardman at 50, Byron Pringle at 29. And so even in the snaps, I think you can see a reason why the Chiefs want to get Josh Gordon in there, because it seems like the receiver they trust the most is D-Rob. We know what he can do. We know what he is. He's an average receiver. He has his limitations. Whereas, again, Gordon, once he's ready, and we'll see, could provide you the additional upside. So that is – I'm sorry, go ahead, John.
If nothing else, it would give defenses somebody they feel like they need to watch carefully.
After week one, these teams are giving Tyreek Hill a lot extra attention, and it's impacting his numbers, and it just offers you that Sammy Watkins role. And I know that we downplayed it quite a bit, but Sammy, when he was healthy, was good, because he really had to pay attention to what Sammy was doing. And like DeMarcus Robinson is not Sammy Watkins, whereas Josh Gordon, I keep saying it, a lot of ifs, but if he can just get on the field, could match that production that Watkins provided you. 6'3" and 225 pounds is something that you got to remember. You know, there's not a lot of even human beings that are of that stature and as athletic as Gordon could potentially be. So a lot to look forward to, and we'll see how this plays out. So that's Andy Reid. talked about Josh Gordon, and we wrapped up the snap counts. When we come back, we'll get into the world famous marinated takeaways. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editors Show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Well, I'm gonna let this marinate.
You know, let that one marinate, and then we can circle back.
Adapt, react, readapt.
It takes time.
It takes years.
That's the takeaway.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon, coming off the Chiefs' second loss in a row. It doesn't even make sense to say. 30-24 to the LA Chargers. We've now had 2 days to think about it. John, as I always do, I'll let you take the first marinated takeaway from this game.
Yeah, after the game was over, I in my piece after the game, I wrote some about actually the last two games. I wrote about how passer rating is a very predictive stat. But the other one that's really predictive for winning and losing is turnovers. And I think what we have seen in the Chiefs' three games so far is an unbelievably uncharacteristic string of games.
Yeah.
You know, the Chiefs were eighth in turnover margin last year, seventh in 2019, sixth in 2018, second in 2017. Overall, during the time that Andy Reid has been the Chiefs head coach, this is from 2013 through 2020, the Chiefs are number one in turnover margin over those eight seasons.
Right, right.
And right now, three games into this season, they are 26th in turnover margin. And here's another thing, too, that I found interesting about the game. The Chiefs have played in their history 36 games where they've had a turnover margin of -4, as they did on Sunday, or less. You know, they've given up more turnovers than they've picked up. In every one of those games, the Chiefs lost. Just one of those games was a Chiefs victory. So that tells you what you're up against when you're in a situation like that where you've given up four turnovers and haven't brought any in of your own. It makes it very difficult to win the game. And the Chiefs have rarely done it in their history, and they didn't do it on Sunday. But even at the end of the game, they were in it and had a chance to win without that last turnover. So I think that tells you something not only about how unusual this situation is for the Chiefs,
yeah,
and the likelihood that it'll change to the better here in the next few games, but also how good the Patrick Mahomes is, that in a situation like that, that he could actually be in a position to come back and win in the final drive of the game.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I think it actually, and I'll be careful here to say it, but it's actually impressive that the Chiefs were down 4-0 turnover-wise,
mm-hmm,
and were in position to win by 1 point. That's, yeah, incredible, really, yeah, in the sense of you have this margin and you put that margin in any game across the league, it might be a blowout, especially if the team is able to take advantage and you should not even be sniffing a chance to win it with, mm-hmm, 2 minutes to go like the Chiefs were. It didn't happen. Yeah. And so the turnovers cost them, and Eric Bieniemy had noted, look, you change that, it's a completely different situation, but it is what it is. They are a 1-2 team because of the turnovers. And I think, and this was my point that I'll, you know, parlay into yours, John, I think you're seeing a shift in strategy of how to play the Chiefs. We know about the aggressiveness, but after that Tyreek Hill 75-yard touchdown that completely changed the Cleveland Browns chances, what you're seeing teams do is make sure that Tyreek Hill has extra attention and really taking out the deep ball altogether. And they say, you know what? If the Chiefs want to methodically check down to Travis Kelce, run screens, run orchestrated plays for Mecole Hardman and beat us in 10 to 12 plays, well, that'll give us 10 to 12 chances to turn the football over. And it worked.
right? It worked. You're not really seeing the deep gains, but the defense is leaving room for the Chiefs to play underneath. And then when Tyreek Hill is coming across, that gives you an opportunity to knock the ball out. When Clyde Edwards-Helaire is about 10 yards in front of the line of scrimmage, as you're tackling him, that gives you another chance to potentially turn it over. And so I think that there is a recipe. What's wild about this is the recipe is very, very hard to execute and succeed with.
Right.
The weird thing is we've seen outliers 2 weeks in a row. And so that has led to Panic City. And I just think we just need to relax, because it's very hard to pull this off. Even though it's happened twice in a row, it's very hard to win this way. And like a team like the Eagles shouldn't. I say it every week, seemingly, and I'm wrong every week. But the Chiefs should blow this team out of the water next week, even with what has happened the past 2 weeks. We'll see if that happens. But you saw what the Cowboys were able to do to the Eagles on Monday Night Football. That should happen again. And I will predict, and I believe it will, because eventually we're going to be right here.
Yeah, and going back to your point about taking Hill out of the game, if you're putting two guys on Hill to take him out of the game, well, that means that if he gets a pass, as he did on Sunday, there's a guy who's tackling him and there's another guy trying to push the ball out. You know, that actually makes it easier to force that turnover on Hill when you're double covering him that way.
And Hill to his point, and I don't blame him for this, but Tyreek Hill, if you watched, he is not a player who gets the pass on the sidelines and embraces contact. A lot of times he'll duck out. And not to say that I blame him, because what is a yard or two going to do, especially if you're past the first down marker? You'd rather have Tyreek Hill healthy because he's so key. But that's on film, too. If you can just surround Hill with two guys and he kind of sees, look, I might be able to get maybe 2-3 more yards out of this, he just ducks out. And it is what it is, but that's a part of his game.
Right. No, I agree.
All right, John, what is your next takeaway?
Well, I thought that Edwards-Helaire started looking like the guy we drafted on Sunday. I mean, we've seen spurts of this during his rookie season where he would dart through the line. But what I saw on Sunday was a guy that not only got 100 yards on the ground, the stats were great, 5.9 yards per carry. Everybody would be happy with that if that's what we had from Edwards-Helaire all the time. But he looked the part. I thought so after the game, and the more I think about it, the more I think that that's right, that he looked like a guy who can get that job done. And I think it's also important to note that because he was doing that, the Chiefs were able to run the ball a lot more often than they have in the other games that they've played this season. On Sunday, they had 30 rushing plays versus 46 passing plays. That's actually a fairly high percentage of rushing plays for the Chiefs. And I think Andy Reid would have said after the game, we wanted to use the rushing more in this game,
right,
to keep the offense from, you know, getting crazy, that was part of our strategy. And they were able to make it work because Edwards-Helaire was doing it. He was finding the holes when they were tackling him. He was dragging people down the field to get extra yards. You love to see that from running back. I thought he looked great on Sunday.
You saw some of the questioning after the game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and was there an emphasis to put more on the run game? No, it was what the Chargers were doing, and which a lot of teams are going to be doing, is taking the deep region away, what I just was talking about. And when they do that, you got to be willing to run the football. And the Chiefs are
take what they'll give you, which is another thing that Mahomes has been a lot better at this year.
Right. It's crazy because there are little intricacies where the Chiefs are better, but they just have not translated to wins.
Right.
So it's hard to compliment on them on those type of things. My next one, my second one here, bear with me, because I think we might just be focused a little too much on the red zone defense. And I tried to explain this a little bit after the game. I tried to explain it, my thought process here on the radio this morning. I think right now, the Chiefs are 11 of 12. They were able to finally get a red zone stop after 11 in a row trips that ended in a touchdown. That's not good. I'm not saying that, whatever, you shouldn't be concerned about that, because at some point down the road, again, there's going to be an opportunity to win a game with a red zone stop, and the Chiefs are going to need to do that. What I mean here is, so you're talking 11 of 12. I don't know what the percentage is of that, but it's high. What is it? 90? It's got to be 90 something. I don't know. Yeah, 90, whatever.
Yeah.
Percent.
It's above 90. Yeah.
Now you get, even right now, I mean, it's early in the season. You're able to muster up two or three red zone stops where you're holding them to a field goal on next game. All of a sudden, you're approaching the 20s in the league. You do that the next game, you're probably, you know, 50% in the league. It's not going to take a lot of red zone stops because just in general, it is hard to stop teams from scoring touchdowns in the red zone. We're only losing sight of that because the number is a ridiculous 100%.
Right.
What I think is becoming more important for Kansas City in the way that teams are playing them is the opposing 25 and the 50. And what I mean by this is once you're within the 20-yard line, a lot of times you're scoring touchdowns anyway. Now you're seeing teams across the board. It's not just John Harbaugh in Baltimore who has done this forever against every team. It's Cleveland. It is L.A., where you're seeing teams go for it on 4th and 9 in your territory. And so what you can do is if you're able to get stops, and we saw at the beginning of the game for the Chiefs, pin them deep in a touchback fashion, and then you really have 25 yards where you're in 3-down territory, because we have seen a drastic change in football, period, against the Chiefs now. Mm-hmm. Whenever a team is able to get past the 50, it's a lot harder for Brandon Staley to go and say, okay, it's 4th and 4, but we're on our own, 37. Can we really afford to go for this? Mm-hmm. You probably can't. Now you're on the Chiefs 37. Easy decision. So yeah. What's more important? Is it the red zone defense where more often than not you're going to surrender points? Or is it this magical window, which we don't even have a name for, in Kansas City between the 25 and the 50? To me, that's the new point of emphasis for the Chiefs, right? Because of this insistence on going for it on 4th down.
You know, you and I had a brief conversation about this the other day, and I'll make the point now that I made then, that the whole concept of the red zone as being from the 20-yard line is kind of arbitrary. If you go back and look at the history of this thing, there was a statistician for the Broncos who just kind of picked that number out of the air. Let's start keeping track of how we do inside the 20-yard line, both on offense and defense. And it's become this thing that that people hold up as this big standard. And it's not that there's no value in the statistic, but really, if you're going to choose a spot where it ought to be something we keep track of, it ought to be around the 30, 35-yard line. That is the point where you can no longer kick a field goal.
More than the red area for me, like to me, what I'm most worried about the defense right now, red area seems meaningless. What matters to me right now is on 4th and short, when these damn teams are insisting that they go for it, you have to stop. You have to start getting some stops, because that'll be put on tape. And then all of a sudden teams won't be doing that so much anymore, because it's going to lead to swings. And then in that 25 to 50, just prevent the decision from altogether, because no way is a team going to want to go for it on 4th and 5 from their own 28-yard line, right? So early drive stops to me are imperative at this point in the new fashion the teams are playing the Chiefs.
Right, I agree. And going back to your point, I think that 30, 35-yard line is the point where it becomes a no-brainer decision for an opposing team to go for it on 4th down instead of kicking a field goal.
And the same should be for Kansas City because of the other reason, because the offense is so good. And we are seeing Andy Reid, I think, lean into that more. He wasn't when Mahomes first took over. He certainly wasn't in the Alex Smith days. But now I think the messaging has gotten across. You have Mike Frazier, the analytics guy for the Chiefs. He's probably like, Andy, it's probably like 67% if we go for this, as far as winning the game. And at that point, you're like 2/3. That's enough.
I would not want to have Mike Frazier's job to be finding all those nuggets all the time and whispering in Andy's ear about it.
With your 21 years of experience, you're incorrect here. Just so you know. Yeah. And I have the numbers to prove it in my hand.
Yeah.
Okay, John, your final takeaway, marinated takeaway from this game.
Yeah, after the Ravens game, I was making the point that, giving up a lot of rushing yards isn't a big deal in the NFL. There's a lot of teams that focus on rushing the ball and they can have success, just like Marty Schottenheimer's Chiefs did in the early 90s. And you can win a lot of games that way, but you can't do well against really good teams that way. And that's why, you know, why the Chiefs would love to be better against the run. They can afford to give up rushing yards and still be in a position to win a whole lot of ball games. They've done that since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback. Not since Alex Smith was the quarterback, since Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback. But they cannot afford to give up as many passing yards and as many touchdowns as they did against the Chargers on Sunday. That is something that they cannot do. That's something they got to fix. I'd even put that up higher than the red zone issue for the very reasons that you mentioned, Pete, is they got to need to get those stops done earlier. And that comes from being better against the pass. And on Sunday, they just weren't.
Tre'Davious Ward Appreciation Day. We sort of, I wouldn't say poo-poo is the right terminology, but we kind of just overlook what Ward means to this team. He was a little bit of a surprise to be out in this game. We thought he might end up playing. He was injured, and then Rashad Fenton goes down, and then you're down to Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker in his first action. I thought Baker looked pretty good, but again, he got the penalty called on him. I didn't agree with it. I don't think it cost the Chiefs the game. I think it was more the four turnovers, which we talked about already. But yeah, you'd like Ward to be there. I think that Ward Hughes Sneed combination is where the Chiefs are throwing their confidence. I think Baker did put some good tape out there. We'll see if he now pushes for more playing time, maybe over a Hughes, but the more healthy cornerbacks, goes without saying, the better the Chiefs are going to be. All right. My final takeaway here is just a reality on the AFC. And I think the takeaway that I have about the playoffs, it's like, it's so early, but one of the things we discussed on this podcast was how these games count just as much as week 16 and week 17, where the playoffs are right in front of you. And I thought the Chiefs right now, and this is the only thing they've lost, in my opinion, they've made their road way more difficult when it comes to clinching a bye week, because you already have two losses. You know, we think that that team is probably going to be around 13-4, if not 14-3. So now you've given yourself one or two losses of margin for error, and your two losses have come against teams that could be ahead of you. If the Chargers win the division, that's obvious they're ahead of you. If the Ravens can find a way to continue winning, they're going to be up for that AFC bye. They already have the head-to-head tiebreaker. And then, you know, the AFC record right now is 1-2. It's your exact record. And so you've hurt yourself for the bye. Now, here's the good thing. The two teams that are undefeated in the conference are the Raiders. And let's chill on the Raiders. They won two overtime games. If everyone is saying, okay, the Chiefs could be 3-0, the Raiders could easily have the same record as the Chiefs. Whenever you play in overtime, you never know how that's going to go. So if you get the ball first, you score a touchdown, you win. The other team doesn't even have to have it. We know that well in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So to me, and guess what? You already have two games left with the Raiders. You can give them those two losses that you've already suffered. So that's fine to me. And the Broncos have just had the easiest schedule known to man. They're the other undefeated AFC team. So the good thing here, if you're looking for bright sides, is there's a lot of season left in front of you. You can still give both the Raiders and the Broncos the two losses to make that up. You can take care of that yourself. And to me, every other team in the AFC has one loss already. And that is a little bit lucky considering your real slow start. But if the Chiefs just can put three or four wins together and all of a sudden you turn around and you're 5-2 with the win included against the Buffalo Bills, you're feeling a lot better about the season because of the way things have sort of played out. I know this is going to sound weird, but if you're picking undefeated teams that you'd want to be undefeated at this point, the Broncos and Raiders are pretty good teams to pick because you, for the most part, own them. Yeah. Own them. And what I'm saying is it's all right there. Like I said, I think playoff bye is now going to be interesting no matter what, because you have to be clearly the best team in the conference. And these games that can go either way, typically, if you're going to be the bye team, you have to get those games. And the Chiefs have surrendered these close games. So now it's, can you start piling up these wins, put yourself back in better position and play yourself back into that? But I think, like I said, it's a grand messaging of, there are so many reasons to feel good about the team. If they clean up the turnovers, that's a step forward. And there's just so much football to go. And things have played out in a way where you can still kind of get yourself back into this.
Yeah, I think you're making really good points here. I would be a little cautious about the Raiders and the Broncos at this point. I mean, you're absolutely right. The Chiefs will have the opportunity to make up those games against those two teams because they play them twice. And that's the both the upside and the downside of your division rivals. The Raiders really could be pretty scary if Derek Carr has a good year. If he can be as good as he was last year, they're going to be a team to watch. I don't think they're going to be contending to win the AFC West. But
one thing I can give the Raiders about Derek Carr is this way that he's playing early in the season, where he is fearless and throwing the ball downfield. In past years, he's played two games like that against the Chiefs. And so I've always said, if he could just play like that against the rest of the league, the Raiders would have a lot better of an opportunity. And he's doing that for once. I disagree completely on the Broncos. The Broncos, our power rankings are going to come out. They've played the three worst teams in the league: Giants, Jaguars, Jets. Those are the three worst teams in the NFL. I don't know how they got this golden schedule. Yeah. They're about to get the Ravens, the Steelers, the Raiders, the Browns. Washington has been shaky, but then they get the Cowboys. So that's 5 of 6 games that could very easily be losses for the Denver Broncos. So
their toughest part of the season is the second 5 games instead of the first 5 games.
The first 3 games have just, if the Chiefs had ever lost to one of those three teams, okay, I'm with you. Let's panic. The Giants, the Jaguars, or the Jets at this point, you can't do it. And so the Broncos have had that kind of play into their hands a little bit there.
Yeah, well, I just, I think it's real easy when you've been so dominant in the division as the Chiefs have been over the last, all the way through, almost all, I guess, of Andy Reid's tenure with the team. It's pretty easy just to dismiss these teams. But, they're working every year to get better and improve their opportunities in the division. And I think the Raiders in particular might be a better team than we give them credit for. And I don't like giving them credit. I hate those guys. I've always hated those guys. I will go to my grave hating those guys. And I don't like that, but I think I have to be fair about, what their chances really are. I hate the Broncos too. And Pete, you're right. I'll have to back away here and say you're right about that, because I hadn't thought about the competition the Broncos have faced up to this point. I think you're probably right that at some point they're gonna just disintegrate right in front of our eyes.
I can agree with you that the Raiders are interesting. The Broncos are certainly coming back to us, and it might be as quickly as Baltimore this week. That's what I think. So
yeah. Well, we'll see. As always.
Okay. Just want to talk briefly about the coordinator press conferences. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you want to listen to what the coordinator said on Monday, you can go back to From the Podium right here on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network. I thought it was a strange day without Andy Reid. A little bit of a weird feeling right now in Kansas City. I think it'll be good to get things back to normal on Wednesday. It's a big week for Andy Reid. Andy Reid is going for his 100th win, once again, now for the second game in a row, with the Chiefs franchise, or third game in a row, I should say, with the Chiefs franchise. And if he's able to clinch it, he'll have 100 wins with the Chiefs, and he gets a chance now to do it because of the unfortunate circumstances against the team he already has 100 wins with. And so a little bit of a cool wrinkle that came because of unfortunate circumstances. So we'll be great to see Andy Reid on Wednesday. Steve Spagnuolo this week, John, as you heard, he talked about the good and the bad. He felt like the team was better at rush defense on early downs. And he also thought the tackling is better. That'll get better if Willie Gay is re-entering this lineup as well. And you kind of hope that Fenton is able to play his way back into the mix out of the concussion protocol and Ward and just get healthy. Frank Clark has been such a disappointment. And I think you're a better team with Frank Clark in the lineup than without. But this is very clearly his last year in Kansas City. I don't think there's a way, even if he played fairly well the rest of the, he would have to play out of his mind at this point for there to be any consideration of the Chiefs not moving on from him after this year. I don't think the Chiefs should regret their decision on Frank Clark, because it led to a Super Bowl and he was so critical in a title. We can't forget that the Chiefs won a title after 50 years of not having a Super Bowl title. I feel the same way about Sammy Watkins. And I used to kill Sammy Watkins. I was wrong about that, because it led to a championship. He was so important in that championship run. So that it's hard to get on these deals, but it's time to move on from Frank Clark. But back to the Spags point, because I'm digging myself a hole here. But there was good and bad. Bad in the red zone, letting up too many points as usual, need to come up with stops in big spots. But you got to feel okay that the rush defense looked a little bit better. You got that two-man tandem you're going against this week in Miles Sanders and Kenny Gainwell. And then the tackling was better, which you're going to need against some of these talented Eagles receivers.
Yeah. You know, I feel bad for Spagnuolo at this point. He's done a great job with the Chiefs. And the defense has not been up to our expectations. I think we were expecting a lot more from the defense going into the season than we have seen up to this point. And that reflects properly on the defensive coordinator. And I think he's getting a lot of heat from fans and some people in the media as well, because the team hasn't played as well as we expected it would. So I feel bad for the guy. I'm not sure that he deserves all the criticism that he's getting. He certainly deserves some criticism. I mean, he's ultimately the guy who's responsible for that. But some of it's gotten kind of over the top. And there have been some good things. I think we did see some good things from the defense on Sunday. Not enough yet. I already talked about the giving up the passing yards as being a problem. Obviously, they need to do better in the red zone because it's just going to be more and more difficult to stop teams once they start going for it on fourth down every time they get inside the 40-yard line. So these things have to be fixed, and those things are on Spagnuolo, but I certainly wouldn't want to be in his shoes right now.
Yeah, I thought Mike Dana having a little bit of a come up this week was good to see. I really liked Mike Dana in training camp. I said it, and then he was a little bit invisible these first couple of weeks with Frank Clark out of the mix in a way. And wow, he looks great on that sack. The Chiefs are not giving up on Chris Jones and this idea that on early downs he's going to be an edge guy. He needs to be better. For the position switch to make sense, he's got to be better. I think that goes without saying. But the Chiefs know all these things. Not like they don't know. They know, right? Like, we're just saying it to say it. So they know this. Eric Bieniemy, his focus was on turnovers. We've discussed that ad nauseum. But he also said fourth down plays, and he had a point about this, and I plan on writing it up at some point when I get some time here. But the Chiefs basically have a pile of plays waiting around for third and fourth down. And I think you this week against the Eagles, and I feel bad for the Eagles because I really think that this is the week the Chiefs pull out all the stops and right this ship. I really think they're going to be aggressive. I really think they're going to be going for the jugular. And I think it starts with keeping the ball, A, football 101, keeping the ball, making sure you don't turn it over. But B, just if it gets to third down, calling your best stuff. I think the Chiefs have had enough of this idea of playing around with teams and maybe trying different. I think they're going to go to Philadelphia, especially against the Eagles. So we know that history with Andy Reid, and go and win this football game. That was the impression. I think we got a very contentious EB yesterday. Like, one of the reporters asked about the idea of the league catching up to the Chiefs. He laughed in his face on Zoom. I won't name the reporter, but he laughed in his face on Zoom. And he said, what are you talking about? Because the numbers are there. So you clean up a little bit, and we should see this offense that we've been waiting for.
Yeah, well, we'd certainly like to. And I certainly think that potential is there. It's, you know, executing on that, you know, not having the turnovers. You know, people talk about turnovers as if they're random. They're not exactly random, or else you wouldn't see the Chiefs be so good at it over a long period of time. That just doesn't support the randomness argument. But there is, you know, some random factor in there. And I think that we've just seen an outlier, and they need to fix it. And if they do, I think they're going to win a lot of ball games. If they'd fixed it in these first 3 weeks, they'd be 3-0, in my opinion. It just happened. And, you know, they're going to do the things they need to do to try and limit that as much as they can. But it's not as if they're never going to give up another turnover. They will. It's just that they won't have as many or in the most critical circumstances, we hope. So
one thing that EB kept saying yesterday, and I took this away too, is something that stood out. So he just kept saying the record, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. I got to imagine that this is his focus with the team all week. I think he's going to keep telling them that they're 1-2. I really do. I really feel like this is a talking point that it just kind of bled through the media a little bit. And he's going to be saying this team, like, who are you? Are you 1-2 or are you about to show that maybe we're not? Right.
Right. So. Well, everybody really? Who's on the team now is somebody who's come on the team since Andy Reid has been here. And this has just not been what we've seen from Andy Reid's teams, you know, that they come out and are bad at the beginning of the season. I guess there was just one season. Was that 2015? I always have to stop and think about this, where they started out the season 1-5 and then killed everybody the rest of the season. That's the, you know, and things were bad then, you know. But so that's why I trust this team to turn it around, because we've seen Reed do that with his teams before. It's not like this has never happened before. We have some history suggesting that he can do it. But I think you're right. I think that the point that you make at this point, if you're Eric Bieniemy, is go in there and say, 1-2, 1-2, is that what you are? Is that what you are? Because I think that is going to be a big motivating factor for these players. They are proud people, all of them, everyone I've ever met.
The Chiefs were 1-5 at one point and were 11-5. That was before Patrick Mahomes. Let's keep that in mind. All right, when we come back, we'll finish up with the best Chiefs thing we heard all week. Stay with us.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, Pete Sweeney, John Dixon, finishing up with the best Chiefs thing we heard all week. And John, this was tough for me. It usually isn't, because someone somewhere typically says something where he's praising the Chiefs or a Chiefs point. I am not about to embrace what was the disgusting brawl at Arrowhead. We didn't even put it on our website because we got to be better than that at Arrowhead Stadium. So let's go to Patrick Mahomes' words of wisdom after the Chiefs had their second loss in a row.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll be ready for the challenge really early in the season. Obviously, we haven't had many of these kind of – we haven't had any since I've been playing quarterback here. We're behind all these teams in our division. But the bright spot is we got a long season to go, so it's just going to be how we respond and how we go to work every single day.
I like there, and you'd only be able to see it if you're watching the video or you watch the post-game press conference. There's almost a little bit of a smirk right now in Mahomes, where you could tell he's not really all that panicked. He's concerned. There's a little concern about how they're playing, but I think he realizes like what's about to happen. And I just find this little smirk thing to be a little foreshadowing into maybe what we're going to get over the next stretch.
Well, I hope you're right. I'd love to see that. I've had it with the start of the season. I'm done with this.
You don't want any more L's.
No. Let's just do this thing that we know the Chiefs can do and get past it, because I'm tired of it. I'm done with it. I don't want to see it anymore. So that's my message to the Chiefs right now. It's just stop it. Just stop it right now. Get this right.
I got to say this. Do you love the Salvador Perez jersey?
Oh, man. Oh,
right?
Man.
Hits a lot of home runs. Doesn't win a lot of games. Just saying. I don't know
if
that had anything to do with the second loss in a row, but let's maybe get away from the Royals gear. I think that might be a bad omen. That's all I'm saying. All right. Ending in on a lighthearted note, if you love the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, please subscribe. Please rate. Please review. Coming up this week, we got the Arrowhead Drive. You guys already heard Out of Structure. Great British Chiefs shows coming at you. Show and BK. I want to hear what Ron the Show Hughley and Brandon Kiley have to say about this current stretch and what the Chiefs need to do against the Eagles. As for us, for John Dixon, I'm Pete Sweeney. Thank you for joining us once again on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.